I feel oppressed by the fact that someone wanted to keep my microphone on. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, April 3rd, 2023. It is 12:45 p.m., and I call this meeting of the Senate Elections Committee to order, and we do have a quorum. Today, we are discussing the Elections Budget Omnibus Bill, Senate File 1636. And Senator Carlson, if you would go to the testifying table. Thank you, Senator Carlson. I understand that you have an amendment to the omnibus bill. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have the A24 amendment.
All right. And it looks like, all right. Would you go ahead and tell us about your A24 amendment?
Sure. Madam Chair, before discussing the amendment, I'll say that I was really excited to include the ability of local jurisdictions to decide for themselves whether or not to adopt ranked choice voting for local elections, at least if they hold their local elections in odd-numbered years. The ranked choice voting is much more complicated than we originally thought, and so there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be done before any thoughts of it going to broader municipalities or statewide. After conversations with other senators and stakeholders, it's clear that additional work is still necessary before the local option is ready to move forward, and we'll need to spend more time to focus on voter education, voter outreach in communities with lower voter turnout rates. With that understanding, I have offer the A24 amendment, which does a few things. It removes the local option for ranked choice voting. It revises the ranked choice voting task force to have one subgroup made of election administrators to focus on the technical changes to our election system that would be needed to implement ranked choice voting on a broader basis. It adds another subgroup focused on voter outreach and education made up of ethnic and disability councils and nine members from impacted communities appointed by the governor, Senate, and House. It brings the two subgroups together to make recommendations about voter-facing aspects of the process. It narrows the grant program so that it'll provide resources to jurisdictions that have already adopted ranked choice voting to augment their voter education efforts, and that requires a 50% match. It provides funding to the Secretary of State to do outreach to those who are newly re-enfranchised under the Restore the Vote legislation, and it invests more funding into Minnesota's current public financing program for qualifying candidates who abide by the spending limits. I'd like to add we'll add the A27 amendment, which provides the governor, House, and Senate from appointing anyone closely connected to a political party or a lobbyist to ensure that these spots are open to community members.
Great. Thank you, Senator Carlson. So the A27 amendment will be incorporated into the A24 amendment, and we'll have Ms. Stengel and Mr. Erickson run through the details of the A24 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's start with the change item spreadsheet, which is the one that has a little bit bigger print, and I'm just going to walk through what the changes are as from the spreadsheet as I walked through it last week. On line 6, the Ranked Choice Voting and Voter Engagement Advisory Task Force has changed numbers in the first couple of years and no tail to reflect the earlier sunset of the task force and some membership changes. Moving down to line 15, there is money in the bill for the Secretary of State to provide some support to the Ranked Choice Voting and Voter Engagement Advisory Task Force, but that too is now one-time funding to reflect the sunset. The voting grant program is changed on line 16. The amount is now $200,000 of grants and up to $10,000 that the Secretary can use for administrative costs. There is a new change item in the bill for an education campaign for the restoration of voting rights that I think Ms. Stengel will talk about in a minute. And there is a reduction of $48,000 each year to the Secretary of State's base budget, which they are currently making, they're transferring to the Department of Corrections for a report that is balancing line 31, which is some report modifications from Senate File 1191. Previously, that had been $165,000 one time, and you'll now see that there's a $33,000 cost that is being appropriated directly to the Department of Corrections instead of the Secretary of State making an ongoing transfer. And then finally, there are a couple of changes in the amounts to the public subsidy on line 26. Turning to the A24, you'll see that most of these lines are just conforming to the spreadsheet changes that I've just described. I'll call out on line 115 to 120. This is the language relating to the restoration of the right to vote to formerly incarcerated individuals. And I do think that covers everything from the spreadsheet. So I think Ms. Stengel will pick up starting on line 129.
Madam Chair and members, starting on line 129 of the A24 amendment, this is a technical change to change the word city to municipal, so it refers to both city and municipal clerks. Line 1.30 deletes the local option ranked choice voting sections. Turning to page 2, the provision in the earlier DE about ranked choice voting grants is deleted and being replaced by a new grant program. And this allows any home rule charter city that has already adopted ranked choice voting for their local elections to apply for a grant to be used for public education on the use of ranked choice voting. The application process is spelled out. The Secretary of State must not award more than $40,000 in grant to any city, and there's a 50% local match. And all of this is for calendar year 2025 leading up to that municipal election. On the top of page 3, you'll see that there's also a report back from the Secretary of State to the legislature on who received these grants and how they were spent. Then starting on page 3, line 11, the task force in the DE is deleted, and the new task force called the Ranked Choice Voting and Voter Engagement Advisory Task Force is in place. And as Senator Carlson described, there is one large task force with all of the members you see here to talk about all of the voter-facing issues. And then there are two subcommittees. One is the Ranked Choice Voting Technical Subcommittee, who is made up of members 1 through 11 on the membership list, and they look at the technical aspects of ranked choice voting. And you can see that they have a list of duties on page 6, starting on line 5. They submit two reports, one in February 1 of 2024 and one in February 1 of 2025, to the chair of the task force, who will bundle it with the other reports and send those on to the legislature. On page 6, line 26, there's the Voter Engagement Subcommittee, and this is comprised of the Secretary of State and the members number appointed from clauses 12 through 22 on page 4. And this group is to look at voter engagement issues. And those duties are spelled out on page 7. They provide similar reports to the task force. And then the task force itself makes recommendations and bundles all of those reports together and sends them to the legislature twice. And then all of the groups sunset on March 1st, 2025, or after they submit their final report to the legislature, whichever is later. And then the A27 amendment I'll cover briefly. Lines 1.3 to 1.6 specify that the governor and the Senate and the House must not appoint members to the Voter Engagement Advisory Task Force that are related to political parties that are elected officials or their family members or registered lobbyists. And then line 1.7 to 1.8 is a technical change, one instance of using task force when it should have been a reference to a subcommittee.
Thank you so much, Mr. Erickson and Ms. Stengel. So because of the changes in the A24 and A27 amendments, we are allowing a limited amount of testimony on those items only. And we have several public testifiers available. You will each be given 2 minutes to make statements regarding
this, the A24 and A27 amendment. First up, we'll have Nicole Freeman from the Office of the Secretary of State. Go ahead, Ms. Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Nicole Freeman, Office of the Secretary of State. I'd like to offer support for the A24 amendment. In particular, the Office of the Secretary of State appreciates the funding for further Restore the Vote outreach work. In our research, as this legislation was moving, we looked at other states who have passed similar legislation and realized that states that have not invested beyond a singular Department of Corrections notice have seen really low participation levels in this newly enfranchised group. And so this funding will help the Office of the Secretary of State directly reach out to those newly enfranchised under the Restore the Vote legislation. The office looks forward to working with community organizations who are already engaged with impacted individuals and the Department of Corrections to create and execute a plan to utilize these funds. Additionally, we appreciate the work that continues to occur regarding the Ranked Choice Voting Task Force. The subcommittee comprised of election administrators puts the right folks in the room to look at the mechanics and the impact on our election system should a future legislature decide to expand ranked choice voting in Minnesota. Thank you, and thank you to the committee for their work on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. And next up, Mary Hartnett from Clean Elections Minnesota. Don't make me take your phone away, Senator.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization working to build a healthy and inclusive democracy. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. First, thank you for including ranked choice voting in the omnibus bill. We are surprised and concerned to see that lines 43 through 56 in the A24 amendment take away the local option of ranked choice voting for cities and schools that hold elections in odd number of years. While testifying in support of RCV and reviewing letters of support, we heard and saw enthusiastic testimony from Rochester, Red Wing, Murray County, Hennepin County, Cook County, Otterdale County, and other cities that would like to adopt the ranked choice voting option. Currently, only 15% of our cities can set their own rules for local elections. The remaining 85% have to ask the Minnesota Legislature for permission. Metro cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, St. Louis Park, and Minnetonka have adopted RCV. We believe greater Minnesota cities should be able to do the same. We believe we need to remove existing regulatory barriers to extend the authority to local statutory jurisdictions so they can adopt RCV. We believe it's more efficient and more democratic. We urge you to reconsider and reinstate this provision. Next, we want to thank you for creating the Voter Engagement Task Force, for including ethnic, Indian Affairs, and Disability Councils. We believe having them involved at the beginning of the process will ensure successful implementation of RCV. We think it has great potential. And we also thank you for funding education efforts for Restore the Vote. And thank you for the A27 amendment that will ensure community members are given the input needed to ensure the engagement of all voters. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think there's a sign-in sheet, so if you could sign in, I'd appreciate that. Mr. Heller, you're next, and you have 2 minutes to share your thoughts with us. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, Chair. My name is Rick Heller. I'm a white male with a camouflage hat and an orange shirt on with a gray beard. Come to testify today on the 1636 A24 amendment. For the record, you could hold the clock just for 1 second. Could you turn on the captioning and screen? There's nothing on in the room, and typically you do that as a courtesy when I come in, and I appreciate that you would do that. Now, getting back on
Mr. Heller, one moment. Since we're not on Zoom today, unfortunately, we aren't able to do that.
I sent the correspondence anyhow that I got from E.B. Black. It's undated. He's the general attorney or counsel for Secretary of State C. Simon. And specifically, the quote on it is, you also asked to become a member of Disability Advisory Council. The Disability Advisory Council is made up of representatives of various organizations. To the best of my knowledge, you are not a representative of an established organization of a person who needs voting assistance, even though you assert your rights on behalf of certain whom you describe as print challenged. Therefore, you are not eligible to be a member on the council. Just so you know, first of all, it was never print challenged. I provided the document. It's print disability. It's being put into the, it's crossing out handicap now, and it governs both education bills and being placed with print disability. This message is for B.B. Black. The other thing is the twice exceptional and print disability now will be lingual words in the statute. Lingual words people will not normally do. Your advisory group has no mention of these people that are represented to be chosen. It mentions technology, but it doesn't necessarily mention accessibility. I filed a complaint in 2016. Steve Simon was courteous enough. You've seen an electronic message at the EAC webpage about the accessibility issues at the voting poll. That's different than perhaps ranked voting. However, ranked voting is very confusing. My suggestion on top of that would be infographic for people to understand the complexity of this process, putting it online and so people can access this in a more meaningful way. A 10,000-foot view would be good. Also consider changing the lingual words in the statute today, twice exceptional, which came in effect in the education, the Minnesota Department of Education, or the 120B15 Gifted and Talented Programming for Students, which is out now adding services. Thank you again for this time to speak for this. I'm open to any questions regarding this. And please check the accessibility of the documents received, Simon. It is not accessible. The header does not read out loud, and the footnote does not. That's a message for Steve Simon.
Okay. Mr. Heller, thank you so much. All right. Any discussion on the amendment, the A11, sorry, the A24 with the A27 incorporated?
You can always do it on the floor.
All right. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
All right. The amendment, the A24 is adopted as amended with the A27. Are there any other amendments to the bill?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Curran. Senator Curran, sorry.
I'm also known as Mr. Curran, Madam Chair. So one of the kinder things they call me. Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, I'd like to move the A25 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Curran. While that amendment is being passed out, why don't you go ahead and describe it for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the A25 amendment does is it essentially removes, as I think it should be, ranked choice voting in its entirety throughout the bill, not only for this feasibility, the task force team, the local ranked choice voting options, it removes it in its entirety in the latest version of the latest amendment that was just adopted. And the reason I bring this forward is, as you know, this has been a contentious issue and there's been a lot of stated claims. But in light of the great report that was produced last week and released early because of this particular entry into this particular elections bill, when we look at the study that was just done or just released and looking at a detailed study that really goes out and from 2009 and looking all around the state and all around the country of does this ranked choice voting accomplish or attempt to accomplish any of the stated goals? And when you look at the report specifically that I'm talking about, I'm sure every one of you have read it from the University of Minnesota or the Humphrey School, Penny Thomas and Larry Jacobs put together a great overview and a feasibility study. And so thus, I think the feasibility study has already been done and the sample has already been looked at in a detailed manner. You look at the ranked choice voting claims of reducing polarization of political parties, and that was one of the claims and goals. When you look at the outcomes, and I won't read the whole thing, you guys have already read it. The study of 2020 election found the ranked choice voting elections were more open to new parties in Maine, but independent and third-party candidates still only received 6% of the vote. You look at particularly sophisticated analysis of ranked choice voting actually increased animosity among Democrats and Republicans compared to our current system. The exact opposite outcome, and I think we've talked about that on a variety of issues relative to intimidation, threats, violence, the entire process. Hasn't achieved any of those goals, and they state the examples in which they've looked at. Second claim has been the ranked choice voting increased diversity of elected government officials. There's little support for this claim. Ranked choice voting may have contributed to an increase in the number of candidates who are racial and ethnic minorities, but there's little evidence that they were more successful in winning the office. Especially, I think, when you look at the other pieces not in this report, when, as a result of that increased participation, all efforts by the people bringing this effort forward have led to imposing new restrictions and financial barriers, thus limiting the actual participation of the very group they claim. Studies found that modest 2% increase in the number of women winning elections to the city council in the Bay Area in California after introduction of ranked choice voting. But this just may have resulted in increased recruitment of women. Third claim, ranked choice voting increased voter turnout and engagement of voters of color. A series of studies have proven that it decreases, actual ranked choice voting decreases turnout and the use of ranked choice opportunity among African Americans. Conversely, whites were more likely to report higher ranking a higher number of candidates. Overall, they found that there's no difference in the turnout in the cities using ranked choice voting compared to those using the current system. They report errors, confusion, lower voter turnout, and greater complexity to ranked choice voting in its process of ranking candidates and tabulating multiple rounds of voting. We've talked about many of those things all throughout this entire elections committee. We're trying to build transparency and election system that everybody can believe in. This just inserts unnecessary confusion and complexity and actually diminishes your own vote. The fourth claim is decreased negativity in campaigning. I think the claim is that candidates ranked choice voting have an incentive to make positive appeals to voters for their second choice, third choice candidates. What they found is only slightly more positive tone in newspaper articles in the cities ranked choice voting compared to those without it. But social media traffic, Twitter specifically, and all the others were far more negative. Study and report increased negativity in Maine's ranked choice voting elections in 2018. Madam Chair, and Senator Carlson, for these reasons, I think it's incumbent upon you and to encourage a no vote. Ranked choice voting has proven, to me, a proven failed experiment for the citizens of Minnesota. We're the test subjects. We've already done this in a variety of areas. Thank God they put this study out. Perfect timing. We've been the guinea pigs. It's failed to prove any assertion since 2009, when the actual group who was pushing this with the outside money from Minnesota. It doesn't warrant any expenditure of state dollars for further studies or task forces for further use. So if you believe in the science, the facts are here. No amount of money spent by Fair Vote and their outside supporters should further cloud your judgment. I implore you, Mr. Chair, please strike down this all ranked choice voting options that are currently in the bill. I encourage a yes vote, and I request a roll call.
Roll call will be granted. Any other comments on the amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Westlin.
No.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
No.
Senator Swadzinski.
No.
Senator Dornick.
Yes.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Mitchell.
No.
Senator Port?
No.
Senator Rust?
No. All right, there being six ayes and eight nays, the amendment does not pass. Any other amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Cran.
Thank you. I'd like to move the 828 amendment.
While that is being passed out, Senator Cran, would you like to describe that for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sure will. What the 828 amendment does is make sure to, what it does is it changes the definition or the proposed outcome of the task force of the voter advisory engagement group to a feasibility study. And so it adjusts the appropriate funding because the feasibility or it adjusts the funding appropriately and redefines that the feasibility task force is established to determine if there's an outcome that would warrant any additional input or changes in our election systems. And with that as well, I'll submit after the fact or to our record, I would introduce that the Humphrey School of Business feasibility study would help us accomplish that goal in a more timely manner. But what it really does is it just moves it from a feasibility until and from a predetermined outcome of implementation of ranked choice voting. So with that, I encourage a green vote, and I request a roll call.
Thank you, Senator Cran. Any discussion of the amendment? The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Westlin.
No.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden. No. Senator Swadzinski.
No.
Senator Dornick.
Yes.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Mitchell.
No.
Senator Port.
No.
Senator Rust.
There being six ayes and eight nays, the amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? All right. We will move then to any additional member discussion. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, in the A24 amendment that we just adopted into the A11, could you, on line 2.7 and again on 215, it make references to language barriers, new voters, or low voter participation rates? Could you give me an idea of what a low voter participation rate is, since Minnesota is consistently some of the best turnout in the nation for voter participation?
Senator Carlson.
Looking for your reference again, 2.7?
2.7 and 2.15. It uses the same language on the voter education grants.
Okay. Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Barr, we're looking at areas that perhaps are have greater confusion because ranked choice voting was initiated on them. And that's primarily in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, where we had a lot of feedback that people didn't know how to use ranked choice voting, or it was not in their culture to vote for more than one person in an election. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that that people are educated on how the ranked choice voting system works. And I must go back to Senator Curran's amendment, which talked about feasibility task force. That actually is what we're looking for, is feasibility. We do not want to force this on people or organizations or municipalities that don't want it. And so that's what our education is for, is to make sure that people understand it before they go to their boards and ask for it. So that's our intention here, is to not force it on people, but also to make sure that maybe areas that we have a concern about turnout, that we focus on those areas, and that the Secretary of State also focuses on those areas.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, I get where you're trying to go to, but how do you define low voter turnout area? I mean, I get language barriers, new voters. I get where you're going. Those are areas to focus on. But how would you define low voter participation rate? Is that like below statewide average, below previous election? There's no definition. It looks to me like if it's not 100%, you could still call it a low voter participation rate. So I'm just trying to get your definition of what is low voter participation rate.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Barr, we're looking at actually doing some polling in those areas to find out if the, there are areas of low participation. We don't want to make any prejudgments on whether that's demographics, whether that's cultural, or just what it is. But we do know that there have not been as many polling efforts that we would like to see for areas that have people that need more education, need more language in their own, let's say, need more instructions in their own language, or maybe they're groups of people that have been from other countries or new citizens. And I guess I would say that in general, we would find out where those areas are focused in the metro area. So I think that's going to be something that's going to be defined by itself.
And I would just add, again, we discussed this last week. In the midterm year, this last midterm, we had around a 60 or 61% voter turnout rate. In the last presidential election, it was 79.96. That still may be highest in the country, but there's still a lot of people who aren't voting. And then if you break those numbers down demographically, you'll probably find that some communities voted higher rates than others. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, that was kind of my point. I mean, one piece of what you just said is new voters and language barriers, and I get you've already got that defined ahead of that. So is low voter participation rate precinct one, ward one, precinct one is 5% lower than its neighboring? Is that, I just don't get this. Low voter participation rates, I haven't heard anything that actually said, how you define that. I mean, I get all the rest of it with, what you're addressing is language barriers, new voters, things like that, but low voter participation rate looks like a blanket phrase that you could use it to cover anything you want to cover. I mean, you mentioned the language barriers, not accustomed to voting from more than one person. That would be new voters. I mean, I follow all of that. It just, how do you, everything you've said you would fall under language barriers and new voters, you could remove low voter participation rates in the definitions you've given me so far. I'm just trying to get some kind of a clarification other than, 61, 79, okay, we're not all going to vote. If it's a presidential, always has a bigger draw than just governors. That's just a fact. It does everywhere. Everybody wants to vote for the new king, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a low voter participation. It's just that's the thing people care about at that particular time, and maybe not so much for the governor. A lot of people just don't vote in the off-year election. So anyway, I guess it's not really a question at this point. It's just a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator
Madam
Carlson.
Chair and Senator Barr, thank you for the comments. And, one of the rates that we're looking at, too, is we're trying to make voting easy and accessible. And one of the groups we could focus in on is under 25. Everybody realizes that the new voters that are 18 have a low participation. They might have a higher participation rate, but they fall off after that. So the under 25 group needs to be addressed. And I think that's something that we want to make sure that we get to those folks who are eligible to vote but just don't come out.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Carlson, along that line, is that everything you just described is the complexity inserted in, you said, focusing on St. Paul, Minneapolis, where they've actually changed the election system and added the unnecessary complexity. So we're creating an additional problem or additional challenges to solve a problem that didn't exist. And so participation and trying to train somebody in a very complex process, how do you get them to trust it when it with further delays every aspect of what our traditional voting process was? Our traditional, and you talked about training somebody who came here that maybe their culture is only one, they only select one candidate. Isn't that our culture? And so why wouldn't we be working to preserve our culture? And so, again, it's all the arguments for this complicated process that leads us further from transparency and trust. You want more money to go after targeted areas, specific areas, and random areas to hopefully turn out voter turnout. It would look like, you know, again, using state dollars for partisan politics. And I don't think we should do it. I think the rest of the bill, in most of it, creates unnecessary complexities, that there's lack of access to ballots. Then you just described, you're trying to create more access. At the same time, the very people who led you here and put all the pressure on this ranked choice voting piece have continually worked to limit access to ballots. There is no barriers to ballot access today, except for those that now have been imposed everywhere ranked choice voting has been implemented. Again, there's no good outcome from this unnecessary change. And so I think I think this should not pass. I don't think it benefits the voters. I think the feasibility's been done. And let's get back to transparency. Let's make sure people on both sides trust, because they haven't over the last many decades. So we're not moving further towards that process. We're moving further away. And so with that, we, of course, request a roll call on the final bill, and we'll be voting no. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Coran. Just to correct a couple of things or to make a couple of comments, there are charter cities that have already adopted ranked choice voting. I think we support local control, generally speaking, but I guess sometimes we don't. They have chosen that as their manner of administering their elections. What this language does is it provides a pretty limited grant. A limited grant of no more than $40,000 to any home rule charter city. That grant has to be matched in order for them to do some additional public education, and it is looking specifically for those who may have challenges in participating. Could be members of the disability community, could be members of the BIPOC community, new voters, et cetera. And so I guess I would disagree with the comments that have been made. And the other thing, the last thing I guess I would say, is that the suggestion that there are no barriers to voting is just not true. There are all kinds of barriers that people experience to voting. And above all else, we should be making sure that folks who want to exercise the franchise have the ability to do that. When we have a 61% turnout in some years, and even 80% in other years, there's still a lot of eligible voters for one reason or another who are choosing not to vote. But certainly the language specifically in A24 is about focusing on providing additional education for those cities who have adopted it, and then creating a task force, as Senator Carlson said, which is really a feasibility study, but also with a community study group that is going to focus on some of the reasons why it may be challenging for folks to exercise their right to vote. Are there any other comments?
Madam Chair?
Yep, Senator Cram.
To follow up on that, so very specific topics of ballot access. And so that's one of the stated goals for the BIPOC community and everybody else. There's no limits. There's no limits or barriers to ballot access. And again, my point was, where it was implemented, and based on the people who promoted it, created chaos because too many people participated. Thus, they changed the fees from $20 to file for office to $250, then on to $500. $100 greater than the governor of Minnesota, our top office in the state. And so that was my specific point on that one. And then I absolutely am looking forward to your support on local control when you come up for a vote on the cannabis bill this session. So I As everyone else, you know, I've had my issues, but I look forward to your support on local control when that comes up, when we amend it to remove to allow local control on those cannabis shops.
Thank you, Senator Cran. I'm just trying to figure out when local control is good and when it's bad. I say that tongue in cheek. Any other comments? Any other debate? Senator Limmer, anyone? Anyone? All right. We are ready then to, Senator Carlson, I'm sorry, do you have any final remarks regarding the bill?
Well, I have to say that I really appreciate all of the help that we have gotten from both sides of the aisle here. Not everything was taken from the minority party, but we did offer a lot of openings for that to be taken care of. And there still are more things that we can do. This bill has changed substantially since we first introduced it. And it is something that I think I'm very proud of, that we're making sure that people have access, that young people have access, and more definition to that access. And I think we are, and you know, there's other things that are in it too, you know, in the campaign finance and public disclosure. But nevertheless, I take this opportunity to thank all the committee members, and especially the staff. And I need to make sure that I mention the staff of Beth Fraser and Taylor Spreeman, as well as the staff of others, and then Lexi Stangl and Andrew Erickson. They have worked hard, very hard. They didn't recognize weekends lately, and so they have worked tremendously hard on this. And so I have to say that we really appreciate their work, and we thank you for all you've done. So I thank you, and I'm urging a positive vote.
Thank you, Senator Carlson, and also thanks to Will Farrell. Freeman, God, I can't.
Yes. Will. Where'd he go?
Honestly, sorry. This, the bus has gone in the ditch. Will, I would like to thank Will Farrell as well.
Madam Chair.
So Will Freeman, we forgot Will Freeman and we forgot Mr. Wiley as well. So before this goes any crazier, Senator, briefly.
Madam Chair, I really have to say that I want to thank my wife, because so many times I forget to thank her until afterwards. So thank you, Gail.
It's like the Academy Awards, I'm telling you. So the clerk will take the role.
Senator Carlson.
Aye.
Senator Westlin.
Aye.
Senator Curran.
No.
Senator Anderson.
No.
Senator Barr.
No.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swadzinski.
Yes.
Senator Dornick.
No.
Senator Limmer.
No.
Senator Marty.
Yes.
Senator Matthews.
No.
Senator Mitchell.
Yes.
Senator Port.
Yes.
Senator Rust.
There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, the Senate File 1636 as amended is recommended to pass and is referred to finance, and the staff will make any technical corrections as needed. And with that, this is the end of our regular hearing. We'll apparently, I'm told, have a few hearings in April to confirm appointments to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board and an informational hearing on a bill. I also would like to reiterate thanks, first of all, to Senator Carlson. I appreciate your leadership on the committee and for the opportunity to be your vice chair. Thank you to all of our members. I appreciate your efforts and your discussions. And with that, we are adjourned.